Hey everyone, it's Corinne. Welcome to our weekly study group. I'm so happy you all are here. Before we dive into our meditation, I do just want to mention that if anybody has interest in coming to the Community Miracle Center conference in Los Angeles in May 2020, I have a few tickets that we are selling at cost. So it's the exact same amount that we paid for the tickets, and I wish I could tell you what it is off the top of my head, but if you're interested, please do reach out. The link is on my website, and again, that's Los Angeles in May 2020 for the Community Miracle Center. I want to say party, but it's a conference, so it's a lot of fun. Okay, let's begin with coming into silence together. And so just finding a comfortable position. Resting your feet perhaps on the floor, hands just either resting in your lap or alongside of you. And if you'd like to, even turn your palms up just to symbolically have this gesture as receding, as openness. You can sit however. This is just symbolic. And as we turn our attention from without to within, having the intention of dropping into the mind, deep into the mind, which is this holy space where love abides. It's the space where we truly find rest and joy and peace and happiness. It can't be found outside of us, for it's here and it's in each and every one of us. And as we see this light that exists in our brothers, we come to know this exact same space, the same light, the same joy, the same love that's in ourselves. So let's step into our willingness to loose the world from all we thought it was, to have willingness to release our perceptions, our judgment, our wounds, our grudges, just connecting with our willingness, even if it's the tiniest bit of willingness, to see it all differently. And handing this tiny bit of willingness over to the Holy Spirit in our mind. And that's where I just love these open palms, as if we're just releasing it to Holy Spirit, not clinging on to anything. And let's even offer this instant in the prayer from the Course. This holy instant we give to you. Be you in charge, for we would follow you, certain that your direction gives us peace. If we need a word, a thought, or a tranquil open mind, these are the gifts that Holy Spirit gives. And we gladly place Spirit in charge tonight by our request. We rest in God. And taking a nice, mindful, deep breath in and out. And coming together to our perception of right here, right now, in this moment that we all share. All righty. So, one other announcement for anybody who didn't hear me last week or is listening to the recording. I previously mentioned that we were going to be changing conference line numbers. That's no longer the case. I need do nothing. We are being upgraded without having to change the number, and I I got an email that that's supposed to happen sometime in August. So maybe we'll notice a difference in call quality. Maybe we won't, but we need to do nothing. So that's the good news. All right, whatever edition you have, please turn to chapter 28. In the Foundation for Inner Peace edition, this is called The Undoing of Fear. In the CE, the Complete and Annotated edition, the purple book, this is called The Little Gap. So we just have different chapter titles. And I believe in the other, in Sparkle, it's also called The Undoing of Fear, and I'm assuming in the original as well. So Undoing of Fear, The Little Gap, whatever you want to call it, it's all good. And it's either, the subheading here is either the present memory or remembering the present. So let's dive in. The miracle does nothing. All it does is undo. And thus it cancels out the interference to what has been done. There's a footnote here. I'm going to reread that. There's a footnote here that just says what has been done is God's creation. What has been done is God's creation. Okay, let's read this again. The miracle does nothing. All it does is undo. It thus cancels out the interference to what has been done. So in other words, the miracle cancels out the interference to God's creation. Because that's the only thing that has been done. None of this else has been done. It does not add, but merely takes away. And what it takes away is long since gone. But being kept in memory appears to have immediate effects. This world was over long ago. The thoughts that made it are no longer in the mind that thought of them and loved them for a while. The miracle but shows the past is gone, and what has truly gone has no effects. Remembering a cause can but produce illusions of its presence, not effects. Okay, let's break this paragraph down. This is good stuff. The miracle does nothing. So again, in our limited frame of reference, coming from an ego thought system, we think about miracles as doing things, as if like something happens in the world, and it's a miracle. This is clearly saying, though, that the miracle does nothing. It cancels out interference to God's creation. It cancels out any fear. It cancels out our mistaken thoughts to the truth. So all the miracle does is undo to reveal what is already there. It doesn't add anything, but it merely takes away. And what it takes away, this is the trippy part. What it takes away is long since gone, but being kept in memory appears to have immediate effects. The world was over long ago. So this is touching on that course teaching about how we are mentally reviewing that which is already over. It's already done with. We are safe at home in God right now. This tiny mad idea that the world was over long ago, but it doesn't seem to be that way because we're keeping it in memory. So it appears to have these immediate effects. And being kept in memory, obviously there has to be some desire to keep it in memory and a choice to keep it in memory for it to keep appearing to have these immediate effects. So it's actually already over and done with. We haven't changed the truth. We are already home, and that's how it is. But again, we're just keeping this memory going in the mind because we're making a choice to. It goes on to say the thoughts that made it. So the thoughts that made this world are no longer in the mind that thought of them and loved them for a while. The miracle but shows the past is gone, and what has truly gone has no effect. So this is sort of that canceling out. When we experience miracles that like fold up the past, it's because we're allowing that memory to be erased from our mind. It falls away. There's no effect anymore. And what I was thinking of as I was saying that, I used to have this, so I grew up down in the Florida Keys, and I used to have this very, like, I don't know, like the past. It was my childhood. Oh, it was a special place. It was amazing, blah, 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 blah. And I went down there a few years back for my 20th high school reunion, and it was wonderful to reconnect with some of my classmates and friends, but it was as if it felt like the past just sort of folded up on itself, like folded up and just fell away. Like I no longer had this sort of longing or, you know, sort of clinging to certain, you know, things from the past. It was as if it just fell away and there was only love there now. So that's what I was specifically thinking of as an example of, like, you know, showing that the past is gone and that it, anything from then has no effects now. This is how healing happens. As we heal and experience miracles, it's showing simply that the past is gone, that it never happened, it was just a dream, and so there can't be effects of that anymore, and that's where healing comes in. So the final sentence here, remember that a cause can produce but illusions of its presence, not effects. So we're not even experiencing real effects. We're experiencing illusions because this cause, you know, the tiny bad idea, it's not even in our mind anymore, which is like another layer of trippiness to try to wrap our heads around. So I love this stuff because this is where, like, the courses get so deep, but it can also make your head spin at the same time. So if you're feeling that, no problem, no worries. Any comments or questions so far? Any insights, examples, anything in response to my share or what we've read, any sentences that stand out to you?
It just makes me think of when I was a kid and my mother and father would have these awful fights periodically over things that happened a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I honestly, as a child, I would think, that is so nuts. It just, and then, you know, you learn that.
Mm-hmm.
And after a while, you start doing that yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I am very happy to unlearn that.
Yeah. Yes. Yes, yes, yes. And that's a great example just with, like, family stuff, parent stuff, hurts from the past, you know, wound from the past. Miracles show us that we are unaffected by that. We are, who we truly are is completely whole and unaffected by any of that. There's what's coming to mind at the moment. I know we talked about this a while ago, and I feel like I referenced it not too long ago, was that story in the Cameo essays in the Purple Edition about Bill Thetford and his parents, you know, seeing him as like the disappointment, you know, like he wasn't the child that they had hoped he would be, and he was sickly, and so they always had this view, this negative view of him, and he internalized that view. And in this Cameo essay, you know, it's sharing this story, and not only did Jesus say to Bill that he chose to adopt that viewpoint, like he chose to accept their viewpoint of himself and internalize it, but that there was also like an attack in that by him accepting that so he could then judge his parents. You know, he could then say, like, you are the cause of my suffering. So when we open ourselves to experience miracles, that means we're willing to let all of that go. We're willing to let all of that be healed, not just, like, you know, what the wound was that happened, but the fact that we, you know, made a choice to take it on, and maybe that we use that to blame or to point fingers. So it all goes, it all gets healed.
I've got a question. In your comment about your high school reunion,
uh-huh,
you had said, you know, you went down there and all the history, I forget the word you used, all, it's like all the past was all folded up.
Mm-hmm.
It just went away. And all that was left there was love.
Mm-hmm.
So I hear phrases like that a lot, and I read it in the course, like love, love, love.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm at the point where I'm like, I need more information about that. And I know the course says there's no more information about that. All we're here to do is remove the blocks. So mm-hmm. I'm can you talk about when you say all that was there was love, what that is? When you say that, what do you mean?
So what I mean by that, I mean, to give an even more concrete example with this situation, there's no more reminiscing of like, oh, the way things used to be, you know, like,
yeah.
I mean, I feel like there's always like that joke of like, you know, old guys sitting around reminiscing about like high school football and they're like, you know, 60 cents, like whatever, they're much older, way out of high school. That sort of rose-colored glasses reminiscing of, oh, how the past used to be. It was as if, when I say folded up, that's just the sense that I got. When I say that only love remained, I really mean only peace remains. There's no reminiscing of it being like, oh, I want to go back there, or I want to relive things, or I want to, like, you know, re-experience certain things. It's just peace. It's just a sense of, presence. Yeah, it's peace. It's a deep peace and an appreciation for all the people that I still know, you know, knew then and know now. So it's a feeling of peace and appreciation and gratitude for the time that I did have down there, because I think I lived down there in the best years, you know, possible, because of how things have changed also. So there's like a it's peace. It's peace.
Okay, that, I get that, the peace part. Okay, thank
and,
you.
But the peace, you're very welcome. The peace has, it's not just like, oh, I feel peaceful. It has a certain energy, an energetic charge to it that makes me want to also label it as love. It's like a happy light feeling, you know, that goes with that peace. So it's not just like contentment. It's like an alive, energized, joyous, loving peace. Try not to use the same word, but...
No, that I understand the concept, and I've experienced what you're talking about, the that peace that, but, and I, then I can just say, okay, yes, that is another word for love.
Yes, yes, it is.
Okay, thank you.
It sure is. You're very welcome. You're very welcome. Thank you. That was a great question.
Corrine?
Yes.
Actually, I'm glad you brought up about peace, because I was thinking some people, when they think about the past, they don't have happy memories. But if we can just have the love, because there's definitely love, even when the memories aren't that great.
Yeah. I'm so glad you brought that up, Christine. That's very, very true. And I mean, it also applies to this situation. I had, you know, not happy memories down there too, but you're absolutely right. When we think of the past and we think of those not happy memories, the healing, like the when miracles happen, it's as if we can still remember, you know, that it wasn't a happy memory, but it's almost like it loses its charge. You know, it doesn't have that same zing or that charge to it that it did before. Because there can still, it can instead be that, you know, that peace and that love that's there, even if it wasn't a good situation. Because perhaps we either have just experienced an internal shift or have a new perspective based on, like, maybe why somebody did, you know, they just did the best that they could at the time. There could be all sorts of factors that can contribute to having that sort of shift, that miracle. But thank you for adding that, because it's very true. And those are the big healings, right? When we don't have those happy memories and when we are able to experience a big shift and have peace and love come out.
I love the fact that you brought up the word energy, because it is energizing to go go without that. You were depleted by those thoughts of what was, and it just drags you down. And it's really, it's just energizing to go into a situation like that without all of that baggage.
Mm-hmm.
It's freeing. It's freedom.
It is. It really is.
It absolutely is. I completely agree. Hmm. How about we read the next paragraph? All the effects of guilt are here no more, for guilt is over. In its passing went its consequences, left without a cause. Why would you cling to it in memory if you did not desire its effects? I want to read that another time, again. Why would you cling to it in memory if you did not desire its effects? I want to read that one more time with the word guilt. Why would you cling to guilt in memory if you did not desire its effects? Remembering is as selective as perception, being its past tense. It is perception of the past as if it were occurring now and still were there to see. Memory, like perception, is a skill made up by you to take the place of what God gave in your creation. And like all the things you made, it can be used to serve another purpose and be means for something else. It can be used to heal and not to hurt if you so wish, if so you wish. Okay, another big paragraph here. Some more mind-bending ideas. So all the effects of guilt are here no more, for guilt is over. Guilt's passing, in guilt's passing went its consequences, and they left without a cause. Why would you cling to guilt in memory if you did not desire its effects? So here is a statement saying that any experiencing of guilt that we still are aware of, and we've talked on previous calls recently about guilt maybe being one of those more obscure concepts to grasp. So if fear resonates with you more, think about fear. So why would you cling to fear in memory if you did not desire its effects? There's something in us that desires its effects. What is that? But that we get to keep being a separate self. We get to keep that sense of separation going, my belief in Corinne, Paula's belief in Paula, et cetera, et cetera. That is what we're clinging to. We're clinging to wanting to be these separate selves. So it goes on to say, I love these next sentences. Remembering is as selective as perception. So has anybody ever had or known somebody with like a selective perception? Like they're only going to see, and this is like, actually there's a psychology term for this where like you see what you want to see and you dismiss what you don't. It's like when, you know, I do believe that Jesus teaches in signs and symbols, but like for somebody who walks around and every time they see, you know, the number 11 or it's like 11, they glance at the clock and it's 11:11 and they look around, they see another number 11. When we're looking for something, we will see it and we will forget about all the thousand times we looked at the clock if it was not 11:11, right? So there's a term for that, and that's like selective perception. We just are seeing what we want to see. This is saying that remembering, so our memory is just as selective as perception, and I see this all the time in my family, where family members only remember certain things a certain way, and leaving out, you know, lots of other details, this sentence, remembering is as selective as perception, being its past tense. It is perception of the past as if it were occurring now. So remembering is perception's past tense. We are in the mind perceiving the past and only remembering certain things. It is perception of the past as if it were occurring now and still were there to see. So this is tying back to the idea that we just talked about in the previous paragraph that the world is over. It was over long ago, but we are remembering we're selectively remembering the past as if it were happening now, to still be experiencing this. It goes on to say, this is so cool, memory, like perception, is a skill made up by the ego to takes the place of what God gave in your creation. So memory is a skill that we made to take the place of truth. We remember the past easily instead of remembering God. We remember all the hurts or all, you know, the situations that happen. We keep those alive in mind, and that prevents us from fully being in the present, which is where God and the Holy Spirit are. But the good news, the good news, is that it goes on to say, like all the things you made, we can repurpose it. We can give our capacity to perceive. We can give our capacity to remember to the Holy Spirit, and the Holy Spirit will use it to help us heal and not to hurt if that is our desire. Isn't that cool? I think that's pretty darn cool. So, I love it how it says remembering is perceptions past tense. That's cool. Questions, comments, what's coming up for you?
What first of all came up for me was I'm the baby of my family.
Mm-hmm.
And when I'd go home or when I was at a family thing, it was always assumed I was going to act like the child I was many years back. And I see that over and over again where people relate to you as if you haven't grown. And I also have taken, when I've got a problem, I give it to the Holy Spirit.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, then I usually see it differently.
That's beautiful, Christine. And again, that's everything, is turning to the Holy Spirit. And what a great example that you just gave about other people relating to you as if you haven't changed or as if you haven't grown. And I think that that's a really important point for us to stop and think about, because how do we do that? You know, how do we relate? I'm going to use family members as an example because they tend to be, you know, our our greatest teachers. How much, when we're with family, are we all relating to each other as if we haven't changed? And maybe in some cases we haven't, but we don't go in with a blank slate. You know, we don't go in with seeing this person with fresh eyes. I have noticed, I'm trying to remember, it was a few years back where I realized that one of my family members, when I looked at him, I realized I'm not seeing him now. I'm seeing all of my stories, you know, all the past junk that's there in my mind. That's what I'm seeing when I'm looking at him. So it was a big moment for me to recognize that that I'm doing that. I'm relating to them as if they haven't grown. And so there's my work. There's my moment where I can turn to the Holy Spirit.
Yeah, but why do we do that? I think that because this all sounds so familiar. Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, is this familiar? Is it fear?
Well, number one, it's what our brains, it's how the brain works. The brain, you know, works with its preconceived, like, schemas and, you know, but the brain, though, was made as a limit to knowledge. Like, so we have to perceive and see through the past. So to answer your question, like why are we like this? Well, number one, this is how our brain is wired. But number two, again, it's to see the past. It's to keep it all going. It's a, remember, this is a, the ego, if it were up to the ego, this would be a closed loop thought system and experience that just goes round and round, birth, death, you know, don't wake up. That's what the ego wants. So obviously we have tools and a pathway out of that. Simply by calling on the Holy Spirit, we're breaking that cycle. But that's just how we are. I mean, I believe there's studies in cognitive psychology that support that, you know, how we see through our own filters and lenses and see,
memories.
It's when I got, prior to getting involved in the Course in Miracles, with my relationship with my husband was, could be very difficult because I was very difficult. Very difficult. And I was always, I mean, I really changed after start working with the Course. And my husband, he wanted nothing to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
And he would say to me, oh, are you going to your cult meeting?
Oh.
But he would never, ever say, don't go. Or even seem, he knew it was changing our relationship in a good way. He knew it. And yet he would, he could not seem to, he didn't seem to even question it, or it still baffles me. And he's long, you know, he passed away 15 years ago. But I was always like, why? He just couldn't seem to, it didn't seem to matter. And and yet it did matter.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
What is that? Like unconscious behavior? I mean, is it
so
just not
what?
Wanting to change or?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I still see. Yeah. I think it's another defense. I think it's another form of fear. Some people are afraid to grow, afraid to change, afraid. I mean, think about even the messages, though, in our culture. This is funny. So if you all have heard of my my friend Craig Villarubia, he, a number of years back, came out with a documentary. And in the documentary, he interviewed somebody by the name of Jacob Blass, which I don't know if anybody's familiar with Jacob Blass. But he's another course teacher. He doesn't do any videos or anything online from what I mean, maybe he has stuff now, but he was never interested in, you know, he just had his in-person group. And Craig interviewed him, and Jacob was saying that, and this is so true, our culture sends so many messages about how it's dangerous to go within and to get quiet. Like, don't do that because you don't know what you're going to find. Think of, like, the movie Exorcist, or, like, you know, where like, there are these films about, like, possession and you know, you don't want to go in there because you don't know what's going to come out. So in some ways, I think it's also, I mean, what does that come down to, though, but fear? It's fear.
Yeah.
I will tell you that I was at a gathering at a neighbor's house, and they're very, they're more fundamentalist Christian. And it was like everybody from their church was there, and somebody was asking me what I do, and I was talking about mindfulness meditation, and the woman visibly took a step back to step away from me. She was like, mindfulness meditation, oh, and like took a step. I mean, she didn't say mindfulness meditation out loud, but I could just tell by the look on her face and the fact that she physically stepped backwards away from me, that any idea of going within and getting quiet meant that, like, you know, I was making myself vulnerable to, like, the devil coming in or something like that. So I think also, you know, it's bottom line fear is, to answer your question, but we can put many labels on that, you know, not wanting to grow, not wanting to change, being afraid to go within, cultural messages, etc.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Petrie, when I hear you, I know you have something to say.
I was just thinking about, you know, my program that I've been through for the past 3 years, and how much just, when we're invested in our identities, how much we cherish our stories.
Yes.
And it makes me remember, like, when I was going through some of my program, part of the program was to look at your whole family history,
mm-hmm.
and look at the stories that have been passed down through the generations about who the family is and why they've come to be. And so it was all this beautiful investigation around looking at stories. And the reason why we did that is, you know, our school is based on A Course in Miracles. The whole program is based on A Course in Miracles. And the whole premise was the line in the course that talks about when you are healed, you are not healed alone. So when we recognize that we are all one, if one person is doing the inner work, it will shift the entire family mobile, meaning the other family members or anyone that you're extending love out to will experience the effects of that healing. And so it's like, if you're just willing to look at how much we cherish our stories, and then you have an understanding of that. Like, we do. We like to cherish our stories. We're not afraid of fear. We're afraid of love.
Mm-hmm.
We're afraid of the love that we are. We cherish our fear. We like, want to hold on to it so tight, and we're like, I'm not letting it go. And, you know, I'm at a point in my life where I'm like, yeah, you know, God, I do want to let this go. I don't want to keep my scraps of fear. I don't want to cherish my fear because it's not giving me anything real.
Mm-hmm.
I want real. I want what's real. I want what's true. And so that is just a real powerful thing, because once you don't have the story anymore, there's nothing else left but love.
Mm.
That's
oh, Deidre. I love that. I love that. I'm writing that down. I want to repeat it. Once you don't have your story anymore, there's only love. That is it.
Deidre, I can absolutely vouch for that, because I had some major stories about my mother-in-law before I got involved with all of this. And my relationship with her was terrible. When I started working with the course, those stories went out the window. And I
mm-hmm.
tell you, she and I became such friends. It's a shift. I was so grateful for this when she finally passed through this life, that I can't tell you how much it meant to me to, and to this day when I think of her, I love her. I just plain love her. It was the most amazing thing to me. And it's just exactly what you're talking about. I no longer wanted those stories.
Mm-hmm.
I let them go. And she picked up on that. I just, it was miraculous.
Yeah.
We are totally transparent. Totally.
Yeah.
Hi, this is Christy. Hi, Christy. I love what everybody's saying. Hi, everybody. And I think it was that Paula who was talking, and Deidre. Both of
mm-hmm.
both things that you guys said resonate. And I also have a question. With dropping the story, is that something that we do? Because I notice I get so into efforting, or this is something I need to work on in therapy. And I've done the whole schema therapy thing before, but is it just really just asking for the stories to drop, or is it doing the work? How does this happen?
For me, it was a conscious decision. I just didn't want it anymore. I wanted to be accepted in the family. I wanted the love that I was denying from myself.
So you decided, but what does that mean? Like, did you notice it come up? Like, when stories would come up, did you say, nope, I'm not going there? Or you asked for help?
The Holy Spirit really was, I was working with the Holy Spirit, okay? Because we really can't do it. All I knew was, Holy Spirit, I knew the thoughts I was having, the negative thoughts that I had about her. I knew, I was very consciously aware of them. And it was always, get this off of me. Holy Spirit, take this from me. And that willingness, the willingness is so important, because prior to the Course in Miracles, I wasn't willing, and I didn't have a clue. But when I started working with the Holy Spirit and asking for shifts in perception, help me to find the love here. Oh, my God. Phenomenal.
That was really helpful, Paula. Christy, did that help?
Yeah, that does help. I was just wondering if there's something else I need to be doing, like, you know, in addition to that.
I just ditto everything that Paula said, because it is a choice. We have to not want it anymore. Like, if we look at what benefits am I getting from keeping the story, you know, well, I get to complain. It sometimes maybe feels good to complain. It's something to talk about. Like, whatever those benefits are, we got to be in a place where it's like, I don't want it anymore. Like, I'm making this conscious choice. And Paula's absolutely spot on. It's with the Holy Spirit that Holy Spirit will undo all the consequences. It's that the atonement is that wiping away of that story in the mind, because then we're allowing it. You know, we're allowing that to be lifted. So it's like we initiate the process through our willingness and our choice, our desire, and then the Holy Spirit steps in, and it's that wiping away. So if it feels like you're doing that but nothing's happening, I always look a little bit deeper of asking myself, okay, where am I unwilling? And sometimes maybe I am completely willing and nothing's shifting, so I'm going to be patient and I'm going to keep watching my mind like a hawk. And if I keep going there, I'm going to keep calling on the Holy Spirit. So,
Corinne, it truly is an ongoing process.
Yes, yes.
It is
sometimes
ongoing. Go ahead.
Like I was going to say, sometimes it just happens instantaneously, like Paula, how you quit smoking. It just fell away one day. But I think by far and large, it is a process also.
Yeah, Corinne.
Right.
Thank you, Alan. The stories that you tell are your attempt to control and structure things.
Your
attempt to explain things.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be willing to give up your control to the divine.
Yeah.
You once said you want to perceive things through the eyes of God.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same idea. If you're not perceiving through the eyes of God, you're attempting to control things and explain things with your stories.
Yes. Yes, yes.
God, that's so perfect.
I want to mention about the lessons. When I took that year, and actually it was much more than a year, to go through the lessons, my perception changed so much that, I had the same stories, but the way I perceived the stories was so different.
Mm-hmm.
And I just really think when you do the lessons, you'll find yourself looking at things differently.
Mm-hmm. Very true.
That is absolutely... and I still do the lessons.
Mm-hmm.
I think the lessons are real. The text, I love the text, but sometimes it's a little too abstract. But those lessons are right. they are so direct and so helpful.
They are. We're going to read another paragraph in just a moment, but I just wanted to see, Deidre, did you have anything? I thought I may have heard you for a split moment. Did you have anything you wanted to add before we read another paragraph?
Oh, I was just adding to what Alan was saying earlier about control, and just reiterating that it always comes down to if we think we want to be right or do we actually want peace?
Yeah, yes.
Do we want to be right or do we want to be happy? That's the question.
Mm-hmm. That is the question.
Yeah.
That sure is. Thank you. Okay.
This first sentence answers Christy's question. Nothing employed for healing represents an effort to do anything at all. We don't do anything at all. It's a recognition that you have no needs that mean something must be done. It, healing, is an unselective memory which is not used to interfere with the truth. All things the Holy Spirit can employ for healing have been given him without the content and the purposes for which they have been made. They are but skills without an application. They await their use. They have no dedication and no aim. I want to keep reading, but I'll just pause real quick. So nothing employed for healing represents an effort to do anything at all. So in other words, really, truly, healing doesn't come from doing anything. It just is. As we opened with, the miracle does nothing. All it does is undo. It does seem like we have doing to do, but we only do to learn that we don't have to do anything. So nothing employed for healing represents an effort to do anything at all. It's a recognition that you have no needs that means something must be done. So in other words, we're recognizing that we nothing needs to be done. We have no need that would compel us to do something. It's an unselective memory which is not used to interfere with the truth. So we're not selecting certain things to remember and holding other things out of awareness. We're not interfering with the truth at all in healing. Now, what I love about these next sentences, all things the Holy Spirit can employ for healing have been given him without the content and the purposes for which they have been made. In other words, so, you know, when I hand things over to the Holy Spirit, I'm handing over content and purposes. Like, you know, my mind is filled with content and specifics. But what's being repurposed? In a way, I like thinking about this section on empathy. I can't think of what chapter it is, but it's the whole section on the true use of empathy. And the course basically says that you can give your capacity. So when we are empathizing with somebody, what are we typically doing but we're joining in their suffering? That's not helpful because that is strengthening. That's just keeping the suffering going. It's strengthening the suffering. It's strengthening the belief in bodies. But we can give our capacity for empathy to the Holy Spirit. So our ability to empathize can be given to the Holy Spirit. That is without the content and the purposes for which they've been made. In other words, the content and purposes that empathy was made with would be to strengthen suffering, to join in suffering. We are just giving the Holy Spirit our capacity for empathy and letting the Holy Spirit show us how to use that for healing. So that's to me what this paragraph is speaking about, that the Holy Spirit is repurposing our capacity. Whatever the specifics are that we give over, the Holy Spirit is repurposing, you know, our capacity for everything that's involved, all the skills, whatever it is that we are doing, the Holy Spirit is repurposing them to help us wake up. And so, in other words, we're not using defenses against the truth. We are giving the Holy Spirit our defenses and letting, you know, just handing them over and letting the Holy Spirit make new meaning out of them. They're awaiting their use. We're not applying them as we set out to apply them, but instead letting the Holy Spirit do that part. I want to read another paragraph. The Holy Spirit can indeed make use of memory, for God himself is there. But this is not a memory of past events, but only of a present state. You are so long accustomed to believe that memory holds only what is past that it's hard for you to realize it is a skill that can remember now. The limitations on remembering the world imposes on it are as vast as those you let the world impose on you. There is no link of memory to the past. If you would have it there, then there it is. But only your desire made the link, and only you have held it to a part of time where guilt appeared to linger still. The Holy Spirit's use of memory is quite apart from time. He does not seek to use it as a means to keep the past, but rather as a way to let it go.
So here we have a capacity to remember, right? We tend to think that memories and remembering is about remembering our physical past. We have this capacity to remember. Holy Spirit will retranslate that capacity for us to remember and to use memory. Instead of us filling that with, you know, our past ideas, the Holy Spirit will use it instead to be the skill that can remember now. The memory of God, which is not really a memory because it's a reality, but we, you know, the memory of God is in our mind. And it's the fear, it's the stories, it's all that stuff that just simply keeps it out of our awareness. But again, as we call in Holy Spirit, our remembering becomes used for healing. And this is where when we have miracles and have glimpses of pure peace, pure love, you know, a situation gets healed, a relationship gets healed. This helps us, these circumstances bring about a remembering of now, a remembering of God in this moment. So with that, I don't know if I'm explaining this as clearly as it could be, but that's that repurposing of our capacity to remember, but rather than remembering and filling it with the past of our own thoughts, the Holy Spirit is using that capacity to help us remember God. So let's pause there. Comments or questions? I think it's really cool that memory is a skill that we can use to remember the now, obviously with the Holy Spirit's help.
So that would be the skill to be in the moment.
Yes, and not just in the
physical. It does feel like it. Go ahead.
I was going to say, not just like, you know, I can feel like I'm in the moment staring, you know, sitting here at my desk staring at the book, but remember there's that teaching in the Course that like even like the smallest thing, like a blade of grass can be seen as a thing of wonder. Like it's not just a paying attention to the moment through our five senses. It's an actual present experience of pure joy and love, of being able to like feel the presence of God through everything, regardless of the form that it seems to take. That's just what I was going to say. What were you going to add, Paula?
No, that's why it feels it feels like it would take a skill to really be present. I've never really been present, I don't think.
I think most of us haven't. We try, but this, again, I feel like even beyond, because I've been very much into, as I'm sure you all know, the practice of mindfulness, because it's helped me with the Course in Miracles so much, but the Course in Miracles takes us to this next step of, like, well, in the present is where God is. It's not just about paying attention to your breath.
Yeah.
It's about using those anchors as a launch point into remembering God now.
This is Kimberly. Can you hear me?
Hi, Kimberly. Yes.
Hi. I think memories. This is really weird. I had a friend that I'd known for 25 plus years, and so I never dated him, but I dated some of his friends, and we all hung out at this bar together and stuff, and He passed away probably like 3 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
And when I heard that Peter had passed away, I had this like sigh of relief because I think of memories now and like everybody's, we're always taking pictures and we're posting stuff on social media. And I'm always so grateful that I graduated from high school in the early 80s and that some of my shenanigans were never,
recorded. I get it.
Right. And so Peter was somebody, he knew some of my shenanigans, right? Like this guy. And so I ended up, marrying one of his really good friends, and now we're divorced, and my ex-husband, I call him one of the world's greatest historians, because he just would throw anything ridiculous that I did in my past, or like, I can't believe you dated that stupid idiot or whatever, you know, just the guy never lets go of anything. So I had this sigh of relief that all of these memories and shenanigans went to the grave with Peter, and they weren't really anything like bad or anything that I would have been arrested for or anything. It was just a lot of bad judgment. I was very young, and then I used to drink a lot, and so I did silly things. So anyway, I also had a girlfriend roommate who I dated her brother in high school. She was a few years older than me. I idolized her. She helped me sneak into this very sports bar that I'm talking about where I met all these people. And then we had a big falling out. Like, she ripped me off. I mean, you know, I could just go on and on and on about all these things. And then we mended our friendship. And then I can't go out and do that with you, because if my boyfriend at the time finds out, he'd break up with me. And then, so she would always hold stuff over my head. Like, she was really good at blackmailing me. And, you know, and then I was from a wealthy family and she wasn't. And so, you know, she always watched how my folks, I could make a phone call and things would be taken care of. And so then I heard that she got married, had kids, was married for a long time, and just recently got divorced. And when one of my mutual friends on Facebook told me, oh, have you talked to her? She's divorced. And I said, oh, what's her last name? And then I got on Facebook and I blocked her. then I realized that I had like all this fear around Cindy, because she was like another Peter, like she knows things, right? you know, about me. And so I pulled stuff over my head. And so this morning, I looked at my phone and I got this message that said that she had sent me a friend request. And then I was like, oh, Facebook, you know, and I was freaking out. And I thought about her all day long. Her mom was like a second mom to me. When her mom passed away, it was very sad for me. I mean, we were so close. And her mom, I had a dream about her mom a month ago. And I still miss her. Mm-hmm. And in the dream, she was in a wheelchair and she couldn't talk. And she said to me in the dream, this is why I'm not here anymore. This is what I would be like. And no one would take care of me.
Aww.
And then to have Cindy do this friend thing to me. And then, you know, one of my girlfriends said, oh, she's not a friend in real life, but she wants to be your friend on Facebook, and wait till she finds out you were married to, you know, Ken, and, you know, and because her and Ken dated. And anyway, it's this whole like thing. And then, so all day long, I've been having all these memories, and most of them are wonderful because we had so much fun together. And then when we started reading this, I realized that I've been afraid of her for years.
Mm.
And it's all in the past. It's all done. It's over. Uh-huh. It's gone. And we all change. Like, I haven't drank in 17 years. Who knows? Maybe she's changed. You know, it's like, am I supposed to be friends with her again? You know, like, you know what I mean? It's like, well, and then I realized that I'm getting past these fears. And like what Deidre said is I don't want to cherish my scraps of fear anymore.
Yeah.
We're all grown, you know, and everybody's changed. And like when you were talking about going back home and how it's all love. It's all love. And that's what I was feeling for her. I'm like, oh, my God, I hope she's good. I just want good. You know, I don't want her to come hang out. I don't know. Anyway, I'll be quiet, and I think we're almost done.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing. I think your story is a beautiful example about, like, just how you just said that you don't want to cherish your scraps of fear anymore, and that's all they are. That's, like,
right.
You know, it's all from the past. It's all scraps of fear, and we can either keep them and keep the past going in place.
And be afraid.
And
yeah.
Be afraid or not, you know, and give it all over. And that's what forgiveness is. It's this atonement process. It's this wiping away of all of that fear, the stories that we don't want anymore, you know, the scraps of fear that we're ready to let go. So it's beautiful that you're ready to let those things go. That's awesome. Thank you, Kimberly. So nice to hear from you. Okay, so yes, we are actually at the top of our time together. So we'll pick up, put a little marker, like if you have a bookmark or something, so you can easily find your place in our text next week when we begin. We'll pick up with our fifth paragraph. And I love you all. Thank you so much for your participation and your questions and holding the space for each other. I love you all, and I will see you next week. Have a good
one. Love you. Thank you.
Love you.
Bye.
Bye.
Good night. Bye-bye.
Night.